Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of the State of Nebraska is now open for the transaction of business. Draw nigh, all ye having business with this Honorable Court, and ye shall be heard. God save the State of Nebraska and this Honorable Court.
Thank you. You may be seated. And good morning to everyone. Much to everybody here at McCook High School and all of the citizens of McCook. We are grateful that you are willing to host us, so we greatly appreciate that. We will begin this morning with introductions from the court. I am Mike Havikin, the Chief Justice, and now by order of seniority as to service on the court, the other members of the court will introduce themselves and they will tell you where they are from, where their district is located.
Good morning. I'm Lindsay Miller-Lerman and my district is centered in Omaha.
Good morning. My name is William Castle. I have the northeastern quadrant of Nebraska and essentially my home is, for that purpose, O'Neill.
Good morning, I'm Stephanie Stacy. My judicial district is Lancaster County.
Good morning, I'm Jeff Funk. I live in Nebraska City. My judicial district is Southeast Nebraska and South Central Nebraska, 25 counties in total.
Good morning, Jonathan Papik. My judicial district is in the Omaha area.
Good morning, I'm John Freinberg. I'm the 6th Judicial District. That's the western 47 counties of the state. This is in my district, so I am happy to be back out here. And I would point out Rush.
Thank you, members of the court. And I should point out that the Chief Justice is chosen from the state as a whole. So with that in mind, our first case this morning is Kane versus Kane. Counsel, do you want to come forward and take your places at your respective tables here? So, is it Mr. Baugh?
Bowie.
Mr. Bowie, are you going to argue this morning?
Yes.
Thank you very much, and you may approach, but before you start, Mr. Chipman, good morning to you also.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Do either counsel have any questions before we begin?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Bowie, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. If I can just start this timer here. May it please the court, my name is Sam Bowie, appearing on behalf of the appellant, Suzette Kane, along with co-counsel, Lindsay Camplin. I would like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal, if I could. The central question in this case is whether the Nebraska grandparent visitation statutes are unconstitutional as applied. The appellant, Suzette Kane, filed a petition to establish grandparent visitation with her 3 grandchildren. The children's parents, appellees Shauna Kane and Michael Leonard, who are divorced, objected to grandparent visitation and moved to dismiss the petition for lack of subject matter jurisdiction and for failure to state a claim. Shauna and Michael argued that the petition should be dismissed on the sole basis that the Nebraska grandparent visitation statutes are unconstitutional under the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment to the United States Constitution.
Is that the reason the district court dismissed the case?
The district court ultimately dismissed the case for lack of subject matter jurisdiction, which is kind of a procedural issue I'd like to expand on here.
Counsel, did any of the parties below notify the Attorney General of the constitutional challenge, and if so, does it appear in our record?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe Mr. Chipman notified in the motion to dismiss the Attorney General that the constitutionality of the grandparent visitation statute was potentially in question, and I believe that's as part of the motion to dismiss.
Has a 9E notice been filed on appeal?
A 9E notice? Not to my knowledge, Your Honor.
What is the impact of that?
I don't believe it really affects how we proceed in this case.
Will it affect how we proceed? Can we reach the constitutional issue you want to talk about without a 9E notice?
I believe that we can. I believe that we're not, or Mr. Chipman rather, the appellees, are not contending that the statutes are wholly facially unconstitutional, as would require the filing of that.
Whose obligation is it? Assume that a 9E notice is required for an as-applied constitutional challenge. Whose obligation is it in this situation where the district court holds the statute is unconstitutional and the appellant is arguing otherwise? In most cases that we see, the 9E notice is filed by the appellant because the appellant is the party contending the statute is unconstitutional. Here that's reversed. Whose burden is it to file a 9E notice?
I would contend that the burden is on the appellees, who in this case are challenging the constitutionality of the statute. And it's therefore their burden to provide that form and notice to the Attorney General.
And if they haven't, what's the consequence?
If they haven't, and assuming it is required, then I believe under the statute and case law, the appeal could be dismissed.
Or would we rather just look at the appeal based on the statute, on the presumption it's okay, the statute's constitutional till otherwise declared?
Correct. And I'd like to maybe expand on my previous comment. And when I said that under the law it appears that the appeal would be dismissed, in this particular case, we can actually deal with the merits of the appeal without reaching the constitutional issue, which brings us back to the subject matter jurisdiction issue decided below. The court below decided or dismissed the petition for lack of subject matter jurisdiction, with the only explanation being that the grandparent visitation statutes were unconstitutional as applied. And it seems clear from precedent from the U.S. Supreme Court, even, that a unconstitutional statute can be entirely unconstitutional, and the court still has jurisdiction. In fact, this very court has decided in previous cases that the grandparent visitation statutes explicitly place jurisdiction in the district court. And so it seems clear that the district court had subject matter jurisdiction, and the court didn't reach whether the petition should be dismissed for failure to state a claim.
So you're saying everybody was at the right courthouse?
Essentially, yes. And it appears clear that the statute vests subject matter jurisdiction in the district court.
Counsel, before your time completely expires, would you like to talk about the merits of the case at all?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you. So, proceeding to the constitutional issue, the constitutional analysis boils down to one question. Viewing all evidence in the light most favorable to the appellant, do the Nebraska grandparent visitation statutes violate the appellee's 14th Amendment rights to the care, custody, and control of their children? The U.S. Supreme Court has not defined a specific test. However, when this court decided Hammett versus Hammett 16 years ago, the court articulated that a constitutional analysis of the non-parent visitation statutes centers around three principles. First, there's a presumption that fit parents act in the best interests of their children. Second, a fit parent's decision concerning grandparent visitation should be accorded at least some special weight. And finally, the presumption in favor of fit parents can be rebutted under certain circumstances. And the petitioning grandparent must prove by clear and convincing evidence a significant beneficial relationship between the grandparent and the grandchild, that it would be in the grandchild's best interest for the relationship to continue. And finally, that such visitation would not adversely interfere with the parent-child relationship.
So does your client have to show that the parents of the child are unfit and their determination not to allow her visitation is improper?
No, Your Honor. The statute does not require a showing of unfitness. In fact, The statute we're applying here proceeds from the assumption that the parents are fit and that there should be special weight accorded to their decision on grandparent visitation, which can be overcome or rebutted in certain circumstances.
So, how would you rebut it in this case?
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
How would you rebut it in this case?
So in this case, it's rebutted through meeting the elements of the Nebraska grandparent visitation statute by clear and convincing evidence. That was this court's analysis in Hammett versus Hammett, that each element of the non-parent visitation statute is specifically crafted that when satisfied by clear and convincing evidence to meet the substantive due process concerns, that we are affording special weight to a parent's determination by showing that the visitation would not adversely interfere with the parent-child relationship. And so the statute provides a mechanism for a petitioning grandparent to rebut that presumption by meeting all the elements by clear and convincing evidence.
So in this case, if you were successful, what would you have this court do?
So I would have this court reverse the order of dismissal and remand this matter for further proceedings. And we can get past, in this case, it was a motion to dismiss. We can get past that stage. We can establish and flesh out a trial record, and we can really reach a decision on the merits, with the grandmother in this case having her day in court.
So the grandparent visitation statutes allow a hearing on the merits based on affidavit. And we have affidavits offered here. Do we have enough in the record?
Do we have enough in the record?
Do we have enough in the record to reach the merits? Did the trial court have enough in the record?
So I don't believe the trial court did. I think that we had affidavits, but we could have, you know, gone to trial. We could have had testimony and other evidence. And I think we can get beyond here the motion to dismissal standard and just determine it on the merits under the standard elaborated in the statute.
Would it be error for a district court to determine a motion for grandparent visitation based on affidavits alone?
You mean outside of the motion to dismiss context?
Correct.
I don't know that we are necessarily taking that position. I don't know that it particularly is the petition of the appellant that it would be error using affidavits only. But we would just like the chance to present that additional evidence back on remand.
What evidence would you be looking to present that you haven't presented already?
We would want testimony from witnesses and other exhibits of that sort. The sort of evidence to be presented at a full trial.
So, for example, who would these witnesses be?
So it could be the petitioning grandmother, the respondents, the children, anyone else who could provide relevant information to whether the Nebraska grandparent visitation statutes are satisfied. And if there are no remaining questions, I would like to ask that this court reverse the order of dismissal and remand the matter for further proceedings consistent with Nebraska law. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Chipman, good morning to you. We've got to work on the clock a bit here.
Good morning, Your Honor.
This is kind of audience participation.
members, honorable court, may it please the court, my name is Dave Chipman. I had the great pleasure of representing the respondents in this matter, Shauna Kane and Michael Leonard, the appellees, as it may be before this court. These are two fit parents, and there's no contest. They even conceded it in their argument. There's no contest. You have two fit parents, and you have no contest that neither of these fit parents want anything to do with the petitioner or appellant in this case.
Before you dive too deeply into the merits, I think you heard the colloquy of my colleagues and I with your opponent about a 9E notice. What's your viewpoint about that?
Your Honor, my viewpoint is that the appellees did everything they had to do at the trial court level, including providing the notice, and that I do not believe that it's on the appellee's responsibility to provide notice to the Attorney General under 9E.
Assume that we conclude to the contrary. How does that affect the way that we might dispose of this appeal?
If you assume that the appellee's responsibility is, if you assume the responsibility is on the appellant, then I think you have to dismiss the case because the Attorney General wasn't properly informed. If you find the same for the appellee, I believe the same is true that the matter, but I don't know how you would remedy that other than possibly a rehearing of some sort, allowing the appellate, you know, the Attorney General opportunity. But if you believe that the Attorney General required notice, then they're not here and the appeal needs to be dismissed at some form or fashion. But again, we didn't bring
9E talks about an obligation to serve the brief assigning the unconstitutionality of the statute on the Attorney General. Here we don't have any party filing a brief assigning unconstitutionality, do we?
We don't.
So what do we do with that?
Well, there's a case called State v. Kelly, and I cite that in my brief. And State v. Kelly basically says, you know, they say, yeah, good for you, as I read it, for notifying the Attorney General, but you weren't asking for a declaratory judgment in this case, declaring the statute to be unconstitutional, and you're not trying to attack, you know, that this is facially unconstitutional, which we're not. So at the trial level today, no one's saying that this grandparent visitation statute, specifically 43-1802, is unconstitutional on its face. We're simply saying it's unconstitutional as applied. My position is, like the appellants, it's not necessary to notify the Attorney General at this stage. It was basically done by the respondents in the underlying case based upon the case of State v. Kelly as a precautionary matter. I considered 9E as we went forward. I believed, as I read that, there was no obligation on the appellee's responsibility. I also didn't think there was any responsibility on the part of the appellant to do it.
So how did constitutionality of statute get in the case at the trial level?
It got in based upon a motion to dismiss, Your Honor. And so the respondents in this matter filed a motion to dismiss, citing the Lule case of Illinois, saying that the petitioner could not bring this action because he had two basically fit parents, and they had the right to not allow this visitation, and that there was no state compelling interest.
I beg your pardon. So in your view, that went to lack of jurisdiction, right? If there were jurisdiction, you also filed, did you not, a 12B6 failure to state a claim?
I did, Your Honor. And so as I thought this case over, you know, there's a case that I think back in 2002 that came before this court. It's a Weider versus the Central Community College case. And what that case says is you look at the substance of the underlying motion. And what the substance of this motion is that two fit parents have the right to not allow grandparent visitation, and the state lacks a compelling interest to enforce visitation upon these two fit parents, and it's unconstitutional as applied to these two fit parents.
All these arguments are made by reference to the existing statute on the assumption it's an okay statute.
Correct. Right. So the statute is presumed to be constitutional. However, again, we're arguing not that it's facially unconstitutional. We're arguing that it is unconstitutionally applied. And the one thing I want to mention as well before this court is in their brief, in the appellant's brief on page 11, they actually state they don't want this court to decide it on a procedural matter. They want this court to, nobody gets to dictate what the court does, obviously, but they want the court to decide it on the substance of the motion, which is, can a grandparent in Nebraska bring a grandparent visitation case with two fit parents, regardless of their marital status? Is there a compelling state interest to do so?
Can you bring it or can you win?
Well, and so I say you can't bring it. I say that you can't bring it. The Troxel v. Granville case talks about fitness. There was no allegation of unfitness, and it's conceded by the appellant that they're both parties are fit.
So would you have to prove unfitness if you're the grandparent bringing this type of case in this situation?
Absolutely, Your Honor. So
you can bring it. You would have to provide evidence that parents are unfit and they're improperly preventing you from having the grandparent visitation. That would be the position. Is that correct?
That's 100% the position, Your Honor. So
is it unconstitutional or is it just an issue of proof?
Well, I agree wholeheartedly with the decision in Lulay with the Illinois Supreme Court, which says that if you, you know, again, this is uncontested, two fit parents, you cannot bring it's unconstitutional to apply to these two fit parents because there's no compelling state interest as it pertains to these two fit parents, because there's no need for the state to intrude on these two fit parents to force them to have grandparent visitation. And that's what the Lulay case says, and I think it's 100% the correct ruling in this case.
So let's go back to jurisdiction for a minute. Does that, regardless of the constitutionality, does that deprive the trial court of jurisdiction?
Well, that's a million-dollar question, Your Honor. And so it has been the appellee's position that it does because they're not operating off a valid off a statute that is constitutional as applied to these people, so the defendants, and so there's no relief that the court could grant them because unconstitutional is applied. So then basically it makes the court's subject matter void. But I also want to mention, again, going back to the Weider case, at the end of the day is they should have had to plead at least that these people were unfit. They didn't, and they're conceding they're not unfit. And so it also would qualify for a failure to bring a claim that which upon relief can be granted, because it is unconstitutional. I mean, two fit parents should not have the intrusion of a third party forcing a third party visitation.
Do you need to introduce a constitutional argument into this case to get the relief you seek? I mean, it seems to me your argument is there's two fit parents, and this is going to adversely interfere with the parent-child relationship between those parents. And it's not in the best interest of the kids. That's what seems like your argument is. But doesn't the statute incorporate those very things? It says the court may, first of all, not obligated, but may grant grandparent visitation. And then the things the court is supposed to consider include best interests of the child and whether granting visitation would adversely interfere with the parent-child relationship.
So let me ask
you. Why do you need to bring the Constitution into this? Why can't you just say not entitled under the statute?
Well, so I think what you're alluding to, this is a clear winner regardless of how it gets decided. This is a case that in no way should the grandparent be allowed visitation. However, as all of you know who have handled family law cases, there is such a great intrusion upon anyone who goes through a family law case, upon the parties, you know, depositions, discovery, attorney, every part of your life. There is no need for the intrusion, and that's basically the only way I believe you get it kicked on a motion to dismiss is by stating and showing that it is unconstitutional as applied to these two parties.
If we find a blanket rule about fitness for grandparent visitation, isn't that going to just significantly increase the intrusion in these type of cases? Because they're going to have to show unfitness, alleged, and show unfitness before they can even say, I want my grandkids.
So Your Honor, here's you're talking about a case with two parents who are fit, right? And if you look at your case law, I can't find one other than the Mousy case, which was decided based on standing. So it's not, I don't think it's that frequent. You have two fit parents where the grandparents trying to come over the top. But I want to say this as far as if someone tries to bring a case like this and try to show unfitness, I think that they're ripe for a 25-824 bringing a frivolous action, because you already have this court in a decree finding them to be fit, awarding basically a joint custody arrangement with these parties. And so I think that if someone comes in and wants to spend that time of trying to demonstrate unfitness, this is why they have counsel, right? To say, this is not a good idea. This is probably a frivolous action. How can you show these people are unfit?
But the measure of when the unfitness would be judged would be at the time of the filing of the grandparent visitation petition, wouldn't it?
So they would have to allege, Your Honor, that there are
some change of circumstances.
Right.
That's possible, right?
Right. It is possible. They would have to allege the unfitness at that time, Your Honor, and then they would have to go on to somehow demonstrate the unfitness. However, again, I think anyone who's under Rule 11, you know, would be hesitant for most cases to try to say these two parents are unfit, given how seldom unfitness is found on parents.
Let's assume hypothetically that we disagree with you and the trial court as to whether or not the trial court had jurisdiction. What should this court do then?
I think the court should look at the substance of the motion, and there is sufficient, and again, that there even the appellant is asking this court not to remand this case on a procedural ground, is this, you know, this is reviewed de novo, and I think this court should decide the underlying principle, which is undenied that two fit parents cannot be held into court. You know, it's unconstitutional to them, and this statute is unconstitutional as applied, and therefore the motion to dismiss is affirmed, either on 12B6 grounds, but at the end of the day is that the court lacks, basically they lack the ability to grant the relief which the appellant is seeking in this case, which is visitation.
Opposing counsel suggests they should be remanded back for a trial. What's your position in respect to that?
Well,
is there enough evidence in our record to decide this case now?
The only concern I would have at all, which would not be our client's concern, would just be a due process issue that they came with a temporary order, asking for temporary custody. Obviously, when you come for temporary custody, you bring all of your evidence. 43-1802 allows the court to decide these cases on affidavits. I think there's more than enough to show there's not clear and convincing evidence that's in the best interest of these children to go with grandma at any point in time. To answer your question.
What happened to the custody issue down below?
What
kind of a hearing did you think you were going into?
This hearing was dual purpose, Your Honor. It was on a motion to dismiss, and it was also on a motion for temporary visitation under the grandparent statute.
Temporary visitation, or was there a custody issue to be? You just made reference, I think, to a custody issue.
I was talking about the custody of the underlying case of the parties, Your Honor. In 2018, or maybe in 2019, these parties had a full on. I say parties, I mean my clients had a full on custody battle, for lack of better words, before the court, which was decided that Shauna Kane would receive primary custody and Michael Leonard would receive parenting time, and they basically have an 8-6 schedule, quasi joint custody.
If I may be confused on the facts, the grandmother here never asked for custody, she just asked for visitation.
She asked only for visitation under the statute, Your Honor. And again, our position continues to be, just like in Lule, the case Lule of Illinois, that there is no compelling state interest when you have two fit parents who both find it is not their children's, ages 4 to 10 now, best interest to have any type of parenting time. And so what we're saying is that there's no compelling state interest to allow the intrusion.
Was there any in loco parentis allegations?
None. There was no allegations that she stood in the role of a parent. It was simply that it was in the best interest of the children that she be granted over the objection of the fit parents to have parenting time. And so the judge in this case didn't even rule on the temporary order, simply dismissed the case, which was the right ruling, given the facts of this case. This case should never have been brought, but the point is that again, Lule is 100% on point in the fact that you have two fit parents and it's unconstitutional as applied to these people. Absolutely is, and I think that's conceived in most of the case law that you'll find. I've gone well beyond my time, so I appreciate this court's time a great deal. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal? I'm afraid I'm...
I know you are.
I think that, Mr. Bowie, we'll give you a minute for rebuttal anyway, because I think Mr. Chipman got a little extra time.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. If I could, okay.
So, counsel for the appellees here stated that there is no compelling state interest. However, this court in Hammett versus Hammett found that the state does have a compelling interest in protecting the well-being of the children in these grandparent visitation cases. The appellees point to Lule versus Lule from Illinois. However, that case deals with a completely different statute, and especially given the concern and level of detail.
Let me interrupt you here and ask you one more time. Do you want this court to send this back for further hearings at the trial court, or as Mr. Chipman has suggested in your brief, didn't you suggest that this court can dispose of the case at this level?
The court could dispose of the appeal at this level by reversing the trial court's determination of lack of subject matter jurisdiction. However, appellant is asking that this court reverse the order of dismissal, remand, and then allow us to conduct discovery, obtain and present rebuttal evidence, material for cross-examination and impeachment, and basically have our day in court beyond just presenting affidavits at the motion to dismiss stage.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Counsel. Thank you very much. That concludes arguments in Kane versus